The Optimist. Conversations with leaders and industries shaping Europe's future. Exploring the ideas and innovations driving progress across the continent.
Welcome again to The Optimist, the Real Talk podcast with leaders who are shaping Europe's digital future. My name is Moritz Schönleber, I'm the Tech Community Lead. Today, our moderator Dale Rickert is joined by Claudia Alsdorf. She's Head of Business Development at Schwarz Digits. Together, they talk about European sovereignty beyond the cloud and why physical and digital infrastructure can no longer be separated. And finally, trust as a competitive advantage for European companies and a new momentum in society. So the questions are going to be, who owns the data, who controls critical systems, and why resilience is becoming a core business value for Europe. So let's begin, have fun, and see you later at the Tech Community Lounge.
Well, Claudia, welcome to The Optimist. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks a lot for the invitation. It's a pleasure to talk to you today.
Fantastic. And look, before we dive into the topics, I always like to ask people at the beginning about what they do to keep themselves optimistic. These are dark times we're living in. What do you do on a daily basis to keep yourself focused on your goals and make sure that you're striving towards what you want to achieve?
Well, when we're talking about the professional life or the private life, but basically they are both linked very closely. So I do find my optimism in the daily work that I'm doing, working on providing new kinds of sovereignty with regard not only to our digital, but also to our physical infrastructure, and especially raise the awareness in our society that we need to do that right now. And the momentum is in a way perfect. Without being cynical, because momentum is perfect, but also that we have real issues. But that's a kind of awakening call that we are currently facing, and that keeps me optimistic each and every day, because I consider myself as one of the promoter of this kind of sovereignty and starting to protect our society.
I really like that concept as well, that you have something to keep you focused because we're not in easy times, because Europe's under pressure. And maybe this brings us to a good point now. Why do we need to think about sovereignty now? What's important? What's changed in the last few years?
What has changed? I mean, I could say very easily the geopolitical situation is very volatile. We all know that and everybody is talking about it. But what has changed is that we haven't put enough attention on securing and modernizing and optimizing our infrastructure. And when I'm talking about infrastructure, I'm basically, first of all, not talking about the digital infrastructure. I'm really talking about the physical infrastructure, which is actually responsible to build the foundation of our society. And we kind of, I don't know really why, but we kind of neglected to take care of our infrastructure. And we took it for given. And now we realize suddenly, oh my gosh, the physical infrastructure is directly interlinked with the digital infrastructure. And now suddenly we see the physical is no longer working. And we do have problems with the digital infrastructure as well. And that, for me, is the explanation why suddenly everybody is talking about it. Of course, it's kind of accelerated by the geopolitical situation, but the basic problem already started years ago.
That's fascinating. I think I'd also like to go a bit deeper in terms of some of the history of Schwarz and what brought you to the point to start to think about building up this infrastructure. Because to start with, if you think, you know, a company which is primarily focused on building up a network of supermarket chains, of course you have other businesses, but how did it come to the point where you became a major supplier of sovereign infrastructure? What's the backstory?
The backstory behind that, sovereign infrastructure again, with Lidl and Kaufland, we are what we call critical infrastructure provider in the real world. That means when we are not able to provide in time the groceries that the German population, or not only the German population, but also European population needs, all the other retailers are not really able to jump in. So we are running into deep problems. And one of the basic foundation to keep our population safe and provide them with food is suddenly in danger. And that is the core piece for Schwarzkopf to realize, okay, we need to find or we need to build an infrastructure for ourselves that is secure and resilient. And in order to do that, we have to build accordingly the corresponding IT in order to protect the physical infrastructure. And that's the core and basic momentum of each and every business decision that we are doing, that we are taking every day, to fulfill on that vision, to become sovereign, to become independent, and to become resilient.
And it's interesting actually hearing you talk about these core critical services and how fundamental they are to our security. I've just come back from Davos, from the World Economic mm-hmm. Forum, mm-hmm. and I had the privilege of sitting in the front row of a session being run by the EU Commission for Security and Defence, Andreas Kubilius. And I was surprised to hear that throughout his sessions, he wasn't talking about armament, he wasn't talking about physical defense, he was talking about infrastructure, about strengthening our society. So these aspects, really yeah. thinking about defense in terms of what it means as a social construct, but also what it means for our businesses, I think is an important mind shift set that we need to get. And this is about, you know, it's not about defending ourselves against foreign actors that are trying to invade, it's about making ourselves stronger and more integrated. If I'm working, you know, if you look at our audience, we have mainly leaders in business, people working in small, medium enterprise, family businesses. How can they get involved to get, I guess, behind these kinds of movements? And what things do they need to be aware of when they're getting started?
Well, first of all, they need to identify the gaps, what keeps them from reaching sovereignty. And here I'm not talking about black and white. I'm not talking about, mm-hmm. well, you are at ground zero right now, but you need to get to 100% sovereignty. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about to identify what are really the mission critical tasks, business decisions, processes that I need to protect, and starting from there. And that might be physical ones. For example, what you just mentioned, coming from Davos, they are talking about infrastructure. Yes, of course they do when we are talking about defense, because if our bridges are no longer functioning, you cannot use them to defend our country. So that's a very simple equation in a way. And that's how you have to start looking at sovereignty. What are the processes? What are the basic assets in the real and in the digital world, which are really mission critical for you? And then start from there. And you don't have to do it all at once and immediately, but it's a kind of journey you have to take.
Now,
that
I can
should
imagine
make it easier, by the way.
That's a good starting point, of sure. I can imagine that, you know, for many listeners, you're thinking, you know, cloud services, how can that be critical infrastructure? Surely, you know, you have encryption, you have secure logins. What's the risk in having infrastructure that's not based in European soil or based on European laws? Could you walk us through why that's important for your mission critical activities?
I would like to give you an example. You probably are aware of the city of Barcelona. Barcelona was one of the front runners when we were talking many years ago already about the smart city concept and how sensors everywhere in the city could improve the quality of life, could improve climate protection, could improve sustainability and so forth and so on. And Barcelona was really great in that, but all the digital infrastructure in order to keep up this kind of smart city up and running has been run by a US-based hyperscaler. Mm-hmm. And they used that as a great demo and use cases for themselves. And then suddenly the city of Barcelona realized, hey, wait a minute, the data that has been produced here does not belong to the technology provider. It needs to belong to the population of Barcelona. So they slipped completely the way of addressing and the ownership of data. And today, Barcelona owns the data that they are actually producing. They own the infrastructure. And therefore, they have suddenly realized not only a smart city concept, they have realized and executed in a way on a kind of innovation engine for the public good. And that's a great example for me how you can use data as public infrastructure. So they realize, okay, the data coming from all these sensors belong to the public and they are part of the public infrastructure just like electricity and water. And that's how we have to treat it. To handle
it. I really like the paradigm shift in terms of data. And it almost makes me wonder, it feels almost like there's a, you know, a culture clash between the US hyperscalers who see data as, you know, there's the old saying, data is the new oil.
Yeah.
Data is a resource seen from this perspective, which from which one can make more money. Whereas the Barcelona and the, I guess, public-centric and I guess a more European view is to say that personal data or public data is to be protected mm-hmm. because it's someone's private rights and it should be an accessible right. or a resource for everybody. And I think that's a much more holistic approach. How do you approach this then with your business models? How do you offer this open architecture without compromising security and also still running as a business model? That must be a challenge.
Well, actually, it's not. Of course, there are, I mean, we decided a couple of years ago that if we want to become truly sovereign in our physical and our digital world, we have to invest. That's for sure. And we decided, since we have not been able to find the adequate solutions from the already existing technology providers, we decided to build it by ourselves and build the technical infrastructure according to our values and our requirements. And that's how we started to build Stackit as a sovereign cloud infrastructure, completely built on open source, on the open source paradigm in order to avoid any kind of locked-in. And that was what we did for a couple of years. Was it easy? Certainly not. But now we are able to say, okay, we, I mean, most of our business was running completely on one of the major US-based hyperscalers. And that has been changed. So we created our own liberty or freedom of choice to say, okay, we are no longer depending on this kind of infrastructure. We built our own infrastructure. We switched all the processes, or still in the process of switching all the processes. As I said in the beginning, that's a long journey. And add each and everything we need in order to keep our physical world up and running. And that's how we approach it. So it's, I would say it's open source security and compliance by design, what we are doing.
It's interesting, if I were to take one word, I think trust would be the value which lies underneath that approach, to say that you hand over the keys to the people who own the data and you give them the rights to choose what they do with it.
Exactly, exactly. And then you ask about the business model. Because, of course, the investment in the beginning and the whole journey when you start, it's not easy, it's not convenient, because there are already existing solutions, which are really great solutions, no questions about it. I mean, they have been developed with tons of money for many, many years and decades, meanwhile. So there are convenient solutions available, but the real USP and competitive advantage is short, midterm, and long term, if you know that your data is secure and it's accessible for you independently from any kind of US Cloud Act or whatever is happening on the geopolitical level. So yeah. It's at the end of the day, it's really competitive advantage and it's a core of your business model. It's not only risk mitigation, it's really a kind of USP that you're creating.
You know, it's fascinating because really what we're talking about with trust, that's an argument for having values like trust at the core of any business, because as if you're in a world where things become less stable, where there's, you know, an undermining of trust, then trust as a value itself in your business model becomes more valuable. People can rely on you in times when you can't rely on others in the world. So I think this is an interesting way of thinking about it. Now, I want to bring up something else because I know, you know, I watch the tech space a lot, and my technical experts always tell me there's a difference between true sovereign cloud and sovereign cloud offerings from external hyperscalers. So I know recently there were, you know, sovereign cloud events run by Google in Munich. AWS is running sovereign cloud. Everyone's trying to jump in on this. What's the difference from having a sovereign cloud offered by an external actor and someone who's actually based in EU territory?
Well, that's basically very easy to answer, to be honest. Whenever this kind of organization is a subsidiary to the US-based headquarter, they are subject to the US cloud. Whatever they're trying to do, they are not really independent of these kind of regulations coming from the US. And that's a very simple answer. You can probably go more into technical deep dives, but with regard to what we can see here right now in Germany, may it be AWS, may it be Delos, if you just the pure fact of the US Cloud Act and the fact that from a governance structure or point of view, they are belonging to the US-based headquarters in a way. They are not really independent and they cannot act like that. They can probably provide the encryption keys. They can do a lot of stuff on the operational level. But from a compliance and legal point of view, it's becoming really difficult for them.
And there's a lack of trust
that you cannot really provide.
What are the hard risks? What does the US Cloud Act involve for someone who has their data stored in an external US company, so to speak?
Well, the hard risk is that the US government can decide, or the president by himself can simply decide, I want to have access to this and that kind of data, and there's actually no real need to justify that. That was probably different a couple of years before. And since I used to work for Microsoft, I know there has been almost no incidents coming from the US government to ask for personal data stored in cloud environments. But that has changed. Yeah.
It's not only about who's behind, you know, the steering wheel in the US, who's the president, because in the end, you know, things have changed in the judiciary as well. We have the FBI being run literally straight out of the White House. You have the High Court is being run by the White House. You have the Department of Justice is being run by the White House. And that means there is no transparency. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I think it's changed the game for everybody in the world. You know, you did mention, you know, that it's not black and white. We don't have to go from purely having external cloud providers to 100% sovereign cloud. Is that the challenge that people face? I know when I speak to a lot of industry people, they say it's really hard to run sovereign cloud when you've got global operations. So if you've got multiple, you know, sites all over the world, factories who need to access and write data to the cloud, is there a hybrid approach that works? And how do you approach that at Schwarz Digits?
Yes, of course it is. And I would always run that. Whenever you have a centralized system, it's becoming dangerous because it's very vulnerable. So you need to build decentralized, stable systems. And decentralized, stable systems also includes multi-cloud strategies. So as I said in the beginning, you need to decide what is really mission critical for you and needs the highest level of protection. And what is more kind of transactional? And when we are talking about transactional, which is different compared, for example, IP-related data or highly sensitive personal data like health data. So if you're talking about transactional data, I would always say, of course, if you're a small, medium-sized business, you already have a great infrastructure up and running with AWS, yes, go with it. Yeah, it would be mad to change this kind of running system, but you need to build a kind of alternative infrastructure next to it and then integrate it. And then you should be safe because then you can always switch and rebuild our infrastructure in a way that you can always change without great effort, without even generate huge amounts of losing money. So that is feasible. It's possible. It requires smart solutions. And it also requires a kind of change of your attitude and the way you look at your realities in the physical as well as in the digital world.
Interesting. And I love the idea of making sure that you allow the transfer of systems and data possible, because I think I was speaking to someone I work with from a very large manufacturing company responsible for production manufacturing IT, and he was saying changing away from their hyperscaler would be almost impossible. They'd have to download every aspect and rebuild the entire systems from scratch. How do we deal with that problem of lock-in if people want to make the transition? What's the first step for someone trying to make a transition for their critical data to a sovereign approach?
Well, yeah, sometimes that's really difficult because it's a core business model from these kind of technology providers to keep the level of log in as high as possible and make it as difficult for you as possible. But we are trying really to provide, and that really goes a little bit very much into the deep technical level, which I'm probably not the perfect person to talk to, but there are tools available, meanwhile, where you can migrate data from one cloud environment to another without generating too much problems, too many frictions, and waste too much money to do that. So at least from our side, we provide these kind of tools because we do have this kind of open source technology stack that we have built, and we can more or less get anything coming from already running our other cloud providers in our systems. Plus, we have created a very comprehensive partner ecosystem meanwhile, including huge software as a service providers like SAP, like ServiceNow, who now are realizing it really makes sense to have a cloud, a sovereign cloud provider below their software as a service offering. And they are starting to work with us very closely. And here we already have existing applications up and running that should also facilitate the change from one cloud environment to the other one. Because you basically find the same software as a service level, and just only the platform as a service and the infrastructure as a service level are different in a way that they are sovereign and open source based.
Fantastic. Look, it's been so wonderful talking to you and really getting a deep dive behind the scenes of what the work you're doing at Schwarz Digits and also why we need this now, which I think is not always obvious if you're doing your daily business, you're just getting through your operations for your company to understand where these, I guess, these weaknesses and also possible vulnerabilities are and how they can be filled. Before we close, I'd like to ask you about the European tech system, about where we are, what we're trying to do in building that up. What inspires you about working in European tech, and what unique strengths do we have in this space that we should work from?
There are different aspects. First of all, I'm already so long in this business that for me it's very important that we are not using technology just because it's great technology. Technology should be the enabler, as I said in the beginning, to protect our society, to build strong democratic foundations. And we cannot really risk to lose that, especially right now. And that is what drives me each and every day to do that. And within the Schwarz Group, and that's a great point about the Schwarz Group, Schwarz Group is for me the first company that I am personally working for who is not a technology provider. It's basically a retailer. So they are using technology for their own use and for their own purpose, which is a great purpose. And technology is an enabler. Does it mean it's not so important? No, not at all. Technology is very important. It's one of the major drivers. But we are using it according to our own values and according to our own purpose. And that is what is really driving me each and every day. And that is also what is inspiring me, because I can see there are economic major forces in Europe who are able to change the wheel in a way that we can build our own infrastructure here. And it's from my personal perspective, we are just waking up. As I said in the beginning, there's a huge momentum. And if we use it right, and we do have the technology, we do have the people, we do have the financial investments necessary to do that, we just need to start it now. And I'm pretty sure we are capable of doing it. And that is what's driving me and what is inspiring me each and every day to do that, which is completely different to work just for a purely technology-driven company.
Brilliant. I think I can't think of a better way to wrap up the session. And having just been in Davos and heard some of the founding fathers of AI, Joshua Bengio, Jan LeCun, speak on stage, they were saying the same thing. We need technology with purpose. We need humans to decide how we can best apply technology to make the world better. So yeah. I think there's a movement happening. And it's fantastic that Schwarz Digits and Schwarz is behind this. Mm-hmm. And look, we look forward to hearing lots more about that at Tech in Heilbronn on the 30th to of May to the 2nd of June. And yeah, that was Claudia Alsdorf, Vice President of Business Development from Schwarz Digits. Such a pleasure to have you there. Thanks so much, Claudia.
Thanks a lot for joining. And it was a very nice, very interesting conversation. And you asked really great questions.
Thanks very much, Claudia.
Thank you.
So that was Dale talking to Claudia Alsdorf from Schwarz Digits. As always, we'd like to close this podcast with our Tech Lounge segment, where we bring in voices and questions from the community, questions we've gathered ourselves or that were sent to us directly. So the first question, dear Dale, is directly inspired by listening to your conversation with Claudia. I was wondering if digital sovereignty is becoming such a critical issue as you just discussed, and it's becoming an issue for European society, the economy and politics alike. From all the conversations you had and from the one with Claudia just right now, do you get the sense that this US Cloud Act could represent the next critical moment for Europe? So this time not in energy or defense, but maybe in data flows. What's your take on that?
I think there's been a gradual recalibration, and it's not even just one aspect. We're not talking about a single act. It's actually about a posture that you notice, or you know, a sentiment we see within interactions between the US and Europe, which is just undermining the long-term trust that's existed and been built up for over 70 years since the post-Second World War period. And what that means is that it's I'm finding it actually play out with the conversations I have with, you know, potential speakers that we're organizing for Tech. We're aware in Europe, and the speakers are aware, that there's a need to think more independently, to think about a future which isn't reliant on the US alone as a potential trading partner, as a potential first trading partner. And this actually brings into play, I guess, a new sense of identity in Europe too. And I think this is a positive side to a movement which will help us actually speed up the way that we develop technology and business models in Europe, which are for Europe but also relevant for the world. So we become, ideally, a trading partner of choice because we have the best offering in terms of the types of relationships we build based on European values.
Okay, interesting. So the second question reflects a recurring theme we hear across our tech community. I would like to ask you, especially listening to your discussion today, I was once again struck by the idea that trust could become a genuine competitive advantage for Europe. Do you see a real momentum for European digital business models built on this trust? Or is European industry already too deeply locked into these US hyperscalers to get this advantage? What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, in many ways, building on what I said in my previous response, people have got their radar up now. People are looking at what their options are. And, you know, a lot of these dependencies, if you want to talk about, you know, lock-in for people who buy digital services from, you know, cloud service providers from the US. If you're a major manufacturer, it takes a lot of time and effort to rebuild your system so that you're European-centric, so that you have sovereign tech offerings really for your core products and services that you run in your company. Now, if that's the case, obviously with this shift that's happening, companies are looking around at what the options are and they start finding the local providers that can give them exactly what they need around open architectures, around true sovereign services. And as they do this, gradually we'll see, you know, a paradigm shift where the new normal becomes thinking about sovereignty as a core aspect of the way that we do business, thinking about privacy and open architectures as a core way of doing business. And before you know it, you know, it might be 10, 15 years down the track, then the whole waterline, the whole way that we think, everything will be acting in within a different paradigm. And I think that paradigm shift the conditions are right for that. And now, you know, it just has to be a natural process of scaling those offerings, making sure we support innovation in these sectors that are trying to create these new services within Europe. And that's the challenge that we're trying to address at Tech.
And a final one, dear Dale, you mentioned that you've just returned from Davos, Switzerland, and you had many conversations there. So when it comes to critical infrastructure, both digital and physical, as you just discussed with Claudia, did you observe a mind shift there in all those discussions? Are there developments or signals we could expect to see at our Tech conference in Heilbronn?
I think in many ways, it's not just around sovereignty, around trust, around open architectures. It's also a more general aspect of responsibility in the way that we're doing business and responsibility in the way that we're developing technology. And I think that, you know, one aspect of that is that within the European Union, within our constitution, we have those core principles written in stone. And this makes it much more logical, and also it's an accepted thing that we build those core values into the way that we do business. Now, I think this idea of responsibility, it spreads out across, you know, the types of, you know, models we're developing in artificial intelligence. And what really blew my mind at Davos, at the World Economic Forum, is you had leading pioneers of artificial intelligence, people like Yoshua Bengio, people like Yann LeCun. I got to see them speaking live, and they weren't talking about how we can maximize profit tomorrow or how we can reach artificial general intelligence as quick as possible. They were talking about how we can do it responsibly, how we can make sure that we build models that pay back for society, for the world as a whole, and not just about the small gains, the bottom line thinking. I think this shows us that really at that top leadership level, these issues do matter, and we have to see this responsible development of technology as a broader topic that goes beyond just any of those individual aspects like sovereignty, like architectures, like trust. This is something we need to actually approach every day in our businesses and decide what we want to support and what kind of relationship we want to have with technology in the long run.
So great, Dale. Thanks. Let's follow up on this. I'm very much looking forward to our next conversation. So that's it for today. Thank you very much for joining us on The Optimist. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love your feedback on Spotify or on whichever platform you're listening from. You can also reach us anytime at hello@tech-europe.org. See you next time. And stay optimistic.
Thanks for listening to The Optimist. For more insights and updates about tech, visit us at tech-europe.org. The Optimist is produced by Tech by Handelsblatt. Music by Christian Heinemann. Stay curious.